Hare Krishna. Here's a follow-up question about sincere attempts to improve quality and quantity of hearing and chanting. And stuff sometimes pops up that may force a choice of whether or not to stick to the plan. In your response, I understood the essence is use common sense under guidance. How to know when common sense is being honestly applied versus the mind, like water wanting to sink to the lowest level, and use that circumstance as an excuse to become lax? Asking every time does not seem practical and can easily be exhausting for the person giving guidance. Well, so then you ask, if there's a situation where you doubt, I mean, it's not every circumstance that you're going to ask, but if there's a circumstance that you doubt, then there's, you know, a few things you can do. You can, one is pause, don't, you know, like impulsively act one way or the other, and then reflect on Prabhupada and what you've heard from, or read from the Lilamrita. How did Prabhupada, what are examples from his life and his instructions to his disciples? And then you can do, you know, like a quick scan. And then instructions that you've received that are principle-based. And so you're looking for Mahajano Yena Katasa Panta. You're looking for instructions that can guide your decision-making. And if nothing comes up on your scan, then you can weigh, and the second thing you can do is, you can weigh, is this a small thing, a medium thing, or a big thing? And if it's a big thing and you don't know, better to ask. If it's a medium thing, keep the pause going a little bit longer and see if there's some inspiration from Super Soul or whatever. And then take a step, being ready to have some indication given whether it's the right choice or the wrong choice. And if it's small, then it's small. Then you just proceed and, you know, gather your lists of, you know, when you do have time with the person guiding you, this is small, but I'd like some guidance. And what I need is not so much the particular, but what's the principle that I should have applied in this circumstance? Did I do the right thing? So you're looking for training and principles so that you're not exhausting the person who's guiding you by having to every little thing and every little thing. So you're looking for principles to guide. And that's again where a little bit of common sense comes in. And people that don't have common sense they've got a problem. I know a few people that don't have common sense, and they've got some problems. Walmart had a sale on common sense, but they ran out. There was a big, big demand and not much supply. Okay. What does it mean to be present during one's service, especially when the service is one where you don't have to pay too much attention? Example, such as sweeping, / mopping, cleaning, etc. What are we to be attentive to? I don't find Those are the example. This particular example is something that immediately has scriptural reference. By cleansing Mandira Marjanado, when you're cleansing the temple, or you're cleaning, mopping, wherever you're cleaning, mopping, a place where Krishna resides in your home or whatever, then the spiritual master is being pleased. That's what we hear in our morning prayers. And Prabhupada said, so you connect the activity with the Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said, when you're cleansing, you're making your heart clean. You're using your hand to clean the place, and by so doing, you're making your heart clean. So that's a nice, you meditate on that, and you're connecting to the person who you're serving. Our founder Acharya is guiding all of us, whether we're disciples of Prabhupada or followers of Prabhupada, he's guiding us how to make our heart clean and make our life connected to Krishna with a clean heart. So that's being present. It's being present with the instruction, connects you with the instructor, connects you with Krishna. Rather than, you know, the absence of that is just a mechanical thing. And if you're doing the thing in a mechanical way, the mind's going to be somewhere, and if it's not connected to Krishna, it's going to be somewhere else. And according to the modes of nature, that's where the somewhere else will be. So don't just leave your life to the current of the modes of nature. They're not very pleasant master, or cruel master. And the mind can go into some very dark places and things like that. So the effort of cleaning is an effort of goodness. Connect the effort of goodness to transcendental thought. So being present is something that's internal. You can do an activity mechanically and be absent. You can do an activity that's very simple and be present with Guru and Krishna. It's the same answer but expressed in a different way. The training that I received as a new devotee was each little thing that you do, you ask the question, why am I doing this? So whether it's a little thing, medium thing, big thing, why am I doing this? And, you know, the answer is because this is the training that Prabhupada gave us. I mean, that was our answer. So when, you know, each of the things, from the time the alarm goes off in the morning until you're taking rest at night and everything in between, why am I going to the shower? Why am I putting on tilak? Why am I putting on my dhoti? Why am I running down the stairs to go to Mangalarti? Why am I standing this way at Mangalarti? Why am I, you know, each of the things. The mindfulness is to be present with the person giving spiritual life to you. And so even the little things, if it doesn't have anything to do with Krishna, you're not going to do it. And if it has something to do with becoming Krishna conscious or serving Krishna, that then it's through the minimally, it's through the instructions of our founder Acharya. And then, okay, well, why has he given this instruction? You can think like that and so forth. But starting point is just connect with our founder Acharya. Okay, here's the India question again. This is a follow-up on the Is Krishna Indian question from yesterday. I know in some scriptures it is said that he has lotus-like eyes. And everything. But is that description actually how he looks? Meaning, Is that description the same in every universe or yuga cycle he makes different appearances in? Or is it based on how the devotee sees or perceives him when he appears, like different deities of Krishna look different, even if they are of the same form, like Balakrishna or Kishore Krishna? It's actually how he looks. Lotus eyes. It's not, I'm not sure exactly where the question is coming from. There's a saying that Prabhupada would refer to sometimes, where the nomenclature or the description of someone based on material sentiment is one thing, and transcendental reality is another thing. So he would give the example of the parents may have a son who is blind, and out of their affection, they name him Padmalochan, lotus eyed. But he's blind, so it's not lotus eyed, but that's their affection. But when we name Krishna Padmalochan, he's Padmalochan. And it's not subjective or emotional or sentimental. His eyes are lotus-like. And specifically, Lord Chaitanya, by different authors, have described that his eyes stretched back nearly to his ears. I mean, you make a movie that would look like a strange person, maybe. But anyway, it's not just their subjective Indian way or something like that. It's the form of the Lord. He's consistently described as how the color of the dhoti that he wears and the ornaments that he wears and his garland and so forth. Very consistent description. During this weekend we heard, hearing is better than experience. Is reading the same as hearing? I guess it depends on whether you read out loud or not. Prabhupada spoke of reading in this way. At least on occasion he would speak of it as recorded kirtan. So literally, the way that the Bhaktivedanta purports were prepared as Prabhupada spoke into a recording device, a dictaphone, and then the recording, then it was, we still use the term tape. It was literally a tape, a spool that had recording tape, and then the little spool, microcassettes, were sent to the transcribers, and they would hear it and then transcribe it, and then it was, you know, became a book. So recorded kirtan, or recorded speaking, recorded sound vibration, very similar to what Vyasadeva did. Previously it was oral tradition and he wrote it down. So it's recorded sound vibration. So in one sense, maybe technically no, it's different, but essentially it's the same, reading and hearing. I read something where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described or differentiated hearing and reading as hearing is something that you literally use your ear, and reading is something where it came in the category of smaranam. And I'm not exactly sure why he made that distinction. It leads to remembrance, but so does hearing lead to remembrance. Anyway, similar, reading, hearing. A common ISKCON vernacular term is hearing and chanting. Shravanam Kirtanam. So, and that hearing and chanting includes reading, so it's not like reading doesn't count. It's hearing and chanting. It counts in the category hearing and chanting. And that phrase, hearing is better than experience. I mean, I guess it depends on how you use the term, but like Rukmini, for example, she heard about Krishna. Because she heard about Krishna, she gave her heart to Krishna. But when Krishna picked her up and put her on the chariot, I'm sure she was really happy. She had an experience. And the residents of Mathura, because Krishna was just a distance away in Vrindavan, they would regularly hear about Krishna. But then when Krishna came to Mathura, you know, ask them, were you content just hearing about Krishna, or are you now experiencing a special kind of happiness by seeing Krishna and being with Krishna? Or go the other direction. Kamsa heard about Krishna. And then he met Krishna. He had a Krishna experience. Don't be careful when you take, we heard this, and how far you go with it. What is the best way to reorient our desire or attachment for companionship and repose it upon a sadhu? If they're really busy. He has sadhu, parentheses, mentor. In other words, what can I do from my side to strengthen this relationship given opening my heart and receiving advice? Nectar of instruction for is rare, is a rare possibility. I do not want to impose, rather work from my end by investing in loving service, but it becomes difficult without the opportunity for association. Well, a nice point of reference for a question like this is Srila Prabhupada's time. How much association did any one of his disciples, did most of his disciples have physical association? You know, sit and disclose our heart and hear. And if you think about that, I think it'll answer your question. I didn't know this till later, but since we're in Gita Nagari, no harm to mention it. Bhakti Tirtha Swami had a practice. Of course, he had a lot of magic. One was he slept very little, but every evening before he took rest, he would write in his diary, like, you know, he would write to Prabhupada. He would disclose his heart to Prabhupada, describe his activity of the day, and his remembrances of Prabhupada during the day, and the service that he had offered to Prabhupada that day. So it was like his, you know, sending a text message. Only he didn't send a text message, he just wrote. He would, like, in his diary. So he was disclosing his heart in that way. Or one can, Anyway, so without necessarily the physical presence of someone to sit with them and have a conversation about stuff, one can do so by, you know, we can serve and associate with that person through instructions, through dedication of what one does to them and to Krishna. Like that. It's similar to something that was said before of instructions that have been received and you remember them. Take your little collection of your notes or the letters or the whatever and you review them and you'll find a lot of what you need will be, for guidance-wise, is within that body of material. And then, you know, Prabhupada's teachings, his writings, they're so voluminous. And associate in that way. On prohibitions and injunctions. Due to my past conditioning, oftentimes I find myself internally overemphasizing prohibitions. I then have to do a lot of work prioritizing the injunction before the prohibition. Could you suggest something to make this struggle simpler? Simpler. I don't know how to directly answer the question because I don't know if like there's a shortcut. When there's, I call it brahminical work. When there's something that's enjoined to become pure. Is there a shortcut to become pure? I think there's a certain amount of work that needs to be done, and calling for mercy that needs to be done, and I don't know of a shortcut. The Yuga Dharma for our age is already a shortcut. Just, you know, be as unqualified as somebody can be and chant and become qualified. And anybody can chant. A child can chant. And anybody can chant. Jagai and Madhai can chant. But, you know, the purification because of Jagai Madhai activity, you know, there's purification that's required. So, another way of saying the same thing is there are three categories of perfection. Nitya Siddha, Sadhana Siddha, and Kripa Siddha. So I suppose simpler is just Krishna bestows perfection on you. You could wait a long time for that to happen. And it might not happen. So, that's not advisable. If he wants to do, he can do. That's simpler. And then otherwise, it's sadhana, and you just follow the sadhana recommendation, and it will carry you there. The mercy is within the sadhana practice itself. I don't think there's a shortcut. At least I don't know of one. Make the connection with those that are guiding you very strong. So that way the mercy component is very strong. So you make your effort and you're receiving maximum mercy. So that makes it a little easier. Maybe that's the answer. Okay. How to be above duality when there are so many disturbances? So, what's the option for duality? The opposite for duality is transcendence. So, when you're situated in transcendence, or striving to be situated in transcendence, that which isn't transcendence isn't disturbing. And if you're looking for transcendence within duality, you'll be disturbed because it isn't. So, and the question is, even within the Sangha of devotees, even amongst the Prabhupada disciple devotees, there one would wish that there is this tranquility of transcendence uniformly. But not all persons who have been around a long time are situated in transcendence. Some, like we were reading, some may fall from that position, or some may deviate from that position, or some may be, have over time become weakened or something. So the promise is not a promise of utopia, as far as like the world in which we live, and even the world of those who are striving to become pure, or in different stages of striving and becoming weakened again, and so forth. So it's the promise is not utopia, as far as the elements around us, but the process itself is transcendental. In and of itself, it's transcendental. So we take shelter of the process in and of itself, as given to us by our founder Acharya and the previous Acharyas, and we steadfastly live accordingly. And then you can transcend duality. The means is provided. I guess another way of answering this is, don't... connection with Krishna is independent of anything other than the connection with Krishna. In other words, circumstances don't create connection with Krishna. Connection with Krishna is a descending matter. Circumstances don't create devotional service. It's the mercy of the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas and our sincere desire to receive that mercy, and then we're connected in devotional service. But the circumstances themselves don't create it, nor can they destroy it. But if I'm looking for, well, if I have these circumstances, then I can be connected with Krishna. And if I don't have these circumstances, if enough of them are not in place, I can't connect with Krishna. Well, that's not what connection with Krishna is in either case, circumstance generated or circumstance destroyed. It's not circumstantial. It's intrinsic to the soul and the eternal relationship between the soul and God. We should try, in the course of what the service that we do, is make the atmosphere conducive. But if the atmosphere isn't conducive, part of our service is to connect with Krishna anyway, and in part of that, connecting with Krishna helps make this the atmosphere conducive, just by the connecting with Krishna part in itself. Uh-oh. When I was driving today morning, I ran over a squirrel. Parentheses, unintentionally. I went and chanted a few times near his dead body. Is there any atonement I can do for my act? Drive slower, I suppose. Give the squirrel more of a chance to get out of the way next time. But, you know, for the act, unintentional wrongdoings, our scripture indicates that the power of the holy name is very strong. And when there are mistakes that are made, just live in the material world. I mean, it's not just, you know, running over a squirrel while you're driving. It's, you know, just breathing or drinking water or walking or just like existing. There's other living entities unintentionally and unavoidably that are sacrificing their lives for our existence just because we exist. So you could try to go out of existence, but that's not possible either. And so you just exist. There are other living entities that are sacrificing because we exist. So what is the atonement for that? And it's the process of devotional service beginning with chanting. How do we balance humility and the need to feel good about ourselves without pride? We all have a need to feel satisfied and good about ourselves. Well, humility doesn't mean feeling bad about yourself. That's a misconception. That's the material. There's material humility and there's spiritual humility. That's, you know, the spiritual humility is, I'm tiny. It's a spiritual conception. I'm very tiny. A tiny, fragmental part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now that's a good feeling. It's not a feeling bad about ourselves feeling. It's a, that we're insignificant in compared to the Supreme. But, you know, the joy is I'm connected to the Supreme. And it's also another kind of joy, the negative, which is, I'm not all these other material things. The body, the aches and pains, the mind, you know, the happiness and distresses of the mind. And it's not who I am. So we're absolutely, in absolute terms, we're absolutely insignificant. But because of the connection with Krishna, that's a very happy humility. It's not a feel bad about myself humility. You know, so the material sense of humility is, you know, is that other thing. Cowering and trembling and self-deprecation and feeling bad about yourself and, you know, basically motive ignorance. That's not what spiritual humility is. So it's good to start with a spiritual conception before you try to go to the humility part. Read Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada said, all devotees, even new bhaktas, are pure devotees. Could I see the quote? Who's the author of this? Pure devotees? What's the reference? Huh? I'm not doubting whether Prabhupada said something like that on one occasion, but I'm looking for the context. You don't remember?
I don't know the full context. All I know is that Prabhupada was questioned, and he mentioned, like, someone asked Prabhupada, all the devotees are pure devotees?
And then he said, you know what the question was, Prabhupada, how many pure devotees are there in the world? And then Prabhupada asked, how many members of ISKCON are there? He was given some number. He said, there are this many pure devotees. So the sense of that is, oh, let me finish your question. Then he explained that it is a matter of green mango and a ripe mango. Why is it that some mangoes take so much longer to ripen than others? That was a little bit Donna Kelly's question that she asked twice. Were you here for that? No? Rupa Goswami teaches that anyabhilashatashunyam gyanakarma dinavratam anukoyena krishna anushilanam bhakti rutama. So that's, you know, in the sadhana, the stages of bhakti, which are uttam bhakti, are sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. And they're all considered uttam bhakti. Although one may be just a sadhaka, a beginning sadhaka. Following Rupa Goswami, so the unripe mango, stay on the branch and the unripe mango becomes a ripe mango. The sadhaka becomes advanced in course of time. So that's, with that context, fine. Then, why does one advance more rapidly than the next? The second Back to Godhead magazine I received, 1969 or 1970, was a mimeographed, stapled together Back to Godhead magazine, and in it was illustrated Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's answer to that question. And it was like a comic form, or illustrated, like in those little boxes. And so the reference for the question was his Brajmandal Parikrama for 30 days, and in the evening there were questions and answers, and during the question-answer period this question was given, and Bhaktisiddhanta's answer was the wedding party. He told the story. So the short version is, by maintaining attachments, one doesn't advance rapidly. One who is able to let go of attachments can advance rapidly. The question was, two persons seemingly doing the same things under the same guidance in the same place in the same way, and one makes rapid progress and the other doesn't. Why? And that was Donna Kelly's question, phrased differently. Same question. And Bhaktisiddhanta's answer is, you row a boat, but you leave the anchor in and you don't go very far. And simply, you maintain attachments while trying to do devotional practices, you won't advance very quickly. There has to be willingness to become attached to Krishna and letting go of those things that are detrimental. Anukoyasya sankalpa pratikoyasya varjanam. They go together. Accepting things favorable, rejecting things unfavorable to devotional service. And those that are able to let go of those things that are unfavorable to devotional service, they'll progress more rapidly. Now, go the other way. Supposing somebody doesn't, they can still become purified. And if they're very sincere about becoming purified, but at the same time holding on to attachments, Krishna may, and sometimes he does, show some special mercy and just take away the attachments. That's the special intervention program, but it doesn't always happen. Krishna doesn't have to specially intervene, but he may. And if he doesn't, then progress will be very slow. There's a nice verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Maybe it's in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bahu janma shadi yavat. If one can go on chanting the holy name of the Lord for millions of lifetimes and not achieve the desired success, Krishna Prema, if one maintains material attachments or continues to make offenses. If I do not know about my past and future, why devotional service now? If I am what I am, that is, not lamenting, why is it like this or that? I'll read it again. I don't get it. If I do not know about my past and future, why devotional service now? If I am what I am, i.e., not lamenting what it is like this or that, or what if is like this or that. Help. Whoever wrote this, could you clarify? Could you clarify, please?
The question is, I do not remember my past, and then I don't know what the future is going to be.
Okay.
So, if I'm happy as it is what I am, then why practice devotional service?
Okay. Nice question. That's clear.
Thank you.
I'll give a few answers. A few responses. One is Krishna's verse in Bhagavad Gita where he says there are four types of pious people that render devotional service unto me. You familiar with that verse? Chatur vidha bhajante mam jana sukrita norjana. Four categories. Pious people may render devotional service unto me in four little prompts. One, suffering, and they want relief from suffering. So one may be going along and everything's just fine, so why do devotional service? Wait a while. And some suffering will come, guaranteed, because there's duality here. Sometimes this and sometimes that. So when the suffering comes, that may be an impetus for someone to do devotional service. Economic betterment. Someone may not just be poor and impoverished, they may have something and they want more, but they're pious. So they approach God. God, please help me get more. That's another impetus for some to engage in devotional service. A third impetus is jigyasu, they're inquisitive. I'd like to know more about God. And so, to know more about God, they take up devotional service, including hearing and chanting, to know more about God. Out of just, even if it's just curiosity, I'd like to know more. Not necessarily, in other words, I want to have a permanent, eternal, transcendental loving relationship with God. I just may be, you know, pious and want to know more about spiritual teachings, so they can engage in devotional service, hearing and chanting. And then the fourth is the Gyani, one who has knowledge, and they know why they're doing what they're doing. So Prabhupada comments, of the four, the Gyani is better than the other three, because they know why they're doing what they're doing. So that could be an answer to your question. If I know, if I have transcendental knowledge, then I'll know, like the song that we sang this morning, the circumstance of life is very tenuous. It's like water on a leaf. All it takes is a little wind, and the leaf shakes and the water falls off. Now, our circumstance, whatever it is that's okay, comfortable, we with knowledge we should know, very shaky circumstance. All it takes is a little. I mean, think of the body and things that can go wrong with the body, and do go wrong with the body sometimes. Things may be just fine, and suddenly, a little something, and it's not fine anymore. And even a little something. Etc. The circumstances of contentment in the material world. So with transcendental knowledge, it's not something to rely on. Not a good bet. In fact, if you wanted to bet, it's a source of misery. It's in whatever is comfortable in today, to this moment, it's just a matter of how many more moments until it's no longer, you know, a source of happiness. Whatever it is. Something outside or something inside, my state of mind, my physical condition, my financial condition. Whatever it is that someone thinks is happiness, it's very fragile. Transcendental knowledge can relieve one from the shelter in the temporary, and seeking instead the shelter in the eternal. Okay? So then, shelter in the eternal has different, there's Gyan, and Gyanis utmost can reach to Brahman, eternal existence, through knowledge alone. It's rare. Extremely rare, what Krishna says it in Bhagavad Gita. Out of many, many thousands of persons, hardly one will endeavor for that perfection. And of those who have achieved that perfection, hardly one, those who have Brahman realized, hardly one out of many millions will know Krishna, because Krishna can be known through devotional service. So if you have the good fortune of association of a Krishna bhakta, or a bhakta of Nrisimhadev or Vishnu or some form of the Lord, then bhakti will take one beyond liberation, or neutralizing the neutral state of material suffering. The unwanted part is the neutral state. Eradication of the unwanted part is the neutral state. But then the positive happiness of the soul connected with the supreme blissful personality of Godhead is the topmost state. So if one has knowledge and devotion, there's a reason. Temporarily, everything, you know, the water is still on the leaf. The wind hasn't blown yet. So, you know, temporarily things are okay. But that's not ultimate happiness, and neutral state is not ultimate happiness either. The positive state. So by knowledge and devotion, there's a reason to take up devotional service. That's just in the beginning stage. And then, of course, as devotional service proceeds further or matures further, then it's far more than just better is better than good. It's superlative. It's, in fact, it's transcendentally good, transcendentally best. So one may have that realization or perspective, even at the beginning stage. One doesn't have to take up devotional service because of a suffering condition. Someone may. But then, if that's the motive, when the suffering is mitigated, it's, you know, see you later, Krishna. It's been nice. Thank you very much. See you later. Back to my other activity, other than devotional service activity, until the pinch is on again and a whoops, and then, Krishna, are you still home? Can you let me in, please? And so that the vacillation or oscillation between worldly activity and devotional service is not the best. It still will purify, and Krishna will accept that service, but it's not the best. The best is not because of relief of a distressful situation, but then these other options that are there. Okay? What is the most successful way or method to create interest about Krishna consciousness for a family member if the member is not in... What's the last word? Initiated? Interested. Yes? What is the most successful way or method to create interest about Krishna consciousness for a family member if the member is not interested? Well, prasadam. It's no joke. And then, let's say, being maybe even as good is just being a good example. Showing to the other family member that's not interested how one who is interested is becoming improved. Like happy, productive, radiant, kind, considerate, like, you know, their life is transforming in a really wonderful way. I've seen that happen in families, where some other family member or members are not so interested. So rather than that, you know, imposing on the others that aren't interested, just continuing to grow within their conviction of Krishna consciousness, exhibiting such a nice condition of life. It's apparent. They don't have to say it. They are it. And, you know, this is really nice. Sometimes that serves to work kind of in a negative way. The uninterested family member starts to become envious of the family member that's not becoming happy, and they're not happy. And so then they feel envy towards the person who's becoming happy, or envy towards Krishna because there's competition for their attention, and Krishna's getting the happy family member's attention instead of them. So envy towards Krishna or towards the person who's becoming happy. Sometimes that happens. So more prasadam. And then another something that can help the uninterested family member is to see models of families that are very, they're very harmonious in working with Krishna at the center within their family. That's powerful. So you know, then it's not necessarily like na 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 na, not like, you know, a tease or a taunt or something, but rather the dynamic is attractive. So it's a little bit like the first one, that the individual is just becoming very happy, and then the other is the model of a family that's harmonious. They're very, you know, united, and they do things together, and you know, their qualities are very nice. That can help the uninterested family member see, wow, that's a nice model. And that sometimes that helps because it's not so close. Like if the family member that is interested and the family member that isn't, it's a little close. It's intimidating, maybe, for some people. But if it's a little more remote, then it's less intimidating and they can look at it and go, wow, that's nice. And then expand that and, you know, a community of people that are really happy together. And, you know, consistently. So that can help if someone that's not interested think, well, this is really nice. What's their secret? And when they hear the secret, they go, no, I'm not interested. But then they continue to see the nice example, and then here's another something that happens. I've seen it happen many times. The non-interested person has a calamity. And then they turn to the person that's, you know, spiritually situated, and they ask them, can you help me with my calamity? I mean, just using the phrase, be there for me, like be my friend and help, just that kind of support. I'm thinking of some specific examples. You know, people in the workplace who are not a family member, but very close, or for years and years working with somebody, and then when they found that that the person they were working with became a Hare Krishna devotee, they freaked out. No, you can't do that. And they had their reasons. No, it's a cult, and it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But then something happened, and then something else happened, and then, you know, their spouse was diagnosed with having cancer. And now here's this person in their workplace that they've known for umpteen years, and they're becoming progressively spiritualized, and their life is like hit the rocks, hit a wall. So help me deal with this situation. I want the kind of strength, inner strength that you have to face this circumstance. Sometimes that helps. Sometimes that helps. Calamity. Those are some thoughts on that question. Okay. How did you meet Srila Prabhupada? How to develop one's service attitude? If one has a problem with a devotee's attitude or behavior, how to deal with it? Okay, that's like a long... We're at 1 o'clock, or 5 minutes to one. We're scheduled to end at 1 o'clock. I've got a pile of papers here. I'll go a little bit after 1 o'clock, but not much. I met Srila Prabhupada. The first meeting with Prabhupada was at the university where I attended school. I met his devotees before I met him, but I still didn't know much about Prabhupada, and they didn't know much about Prabhupada either. Because we were all kind of, you know, we're just college students, but they were practicing and, you know, talking about things and I would hear them talking about things, but they didn't know so much about Prabhupada. And then when Prabhupada came to the campus, they didn't tell me that Prabhupada had come to the campus. I just found out about it. I just like was passing by in the student union and saw there was a big crowd of people and went inside and there was Prabhupada. But I can say, you know, in retrospect, just hearing his chanting, live chanting, changed my life completely. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't connect their interest in Krishna consciousness with Prabhupada. I didn't know enough to do that. But just hearing Prabhupada's chanting changed my life. How to develop one's service attitude. Well, associating with those that have service attitude, understanding the importance of it, becoming purified to the process of devotional service, and consciously cultivating that mood. Just remain in a spiritual conception, remain engaged favorably in Krishna service, and continue to stay in that oriented like that, favorably engaged in Krishna service. Because you can't stay favorably engaged in Krishna service if you're not humble, because things will interrupt it. And other feelings will come. So if one has a problem with a devotee's attitude or behavior, how does one deal with it? Well, Krishna gives instructions in Bhagavad Gita in kind of like layers. And the first layer is the toleration, tolerant, tangs tatikshvasu bharata. Look beyond the duality and instead look to transcendence. Withdraw consciousness from, I don't like this kind of duality over here, and instead think of the transcendence. And another related, but another principle is, if there's a behavior or an attitude that's displeasing, see the soul, separate the soul and the behavior or the attitude. Because the behavior and the attitude is not what the soul is. And here's a soul that's, the frame of the question is a devotee. So the soul is Krishna's devotee and trying to become connected to Krishna. And then there's a behavior that's inconsistent with that, or an attitude that's inconsistent with that. But deeper inside is the soul that's part of Krishna and striving to become again connected with Krishna. Here's what Prabhupada said. It's similar. Prabhupada received a letter from some lady, and the letter was basically, Swamiji, you're wonderful, and what you've written is wonderful, what you've done is wonderful, appreciation. And then, but, you know, some members of your society don't represent your teachings very nicely. They're actually giving your teachings a bad name. They're giving your society a blemish because they're not consistent with what your teachings are. So then Prabhupada wrote a reply, thank you very much for your appreciation and your appreciation. As far as the members that are not representing me well, please look upon them in the following way. They know that they're not clean. They're trying to take up a means to become clean. Like someone who is taking a shower. Don't fault them for being not clean. They're in the shower. They're trying to make themselves clean. Appreciate that they're trying to make themselves clean because they know that they're not. And then, you know, again, thank you for your kind words. And so that's something. Look beyond the moment of this isn't right, or I don't like it, either or combination. And look to the purifying process of devotional service. Here's a soul who's taking to the purifying process of devotional service. In what way can I not only appreciate that they've done that, but how can I assist them in the cleansing process which they wish to undertake? And if you think in that way, you can be an instrument of Krishna to make the situation better. And if you think the other way, you're part of the unclean condition that needs to be cleansed. You're depriving yourself of being an instrument of Krishna to improve the situation. Got a pile of papers.
Okay, here goes.
One more. It seems that chanting is very difficult when the mind is not focused. I have tried in the past to fix the mind on the Maha Mantra, but it is indeed very difficult since the mind finds a way to escape. Can you please give some suggestions to fix the mind? That's like we'll have a japa retreat. Come and attend the japa retreat. That's a suggestion. And if you can, you know, it's going to be a while before we'll have another one because of the schedule of Radhastami and Janmastami again this year, being so close to the Labor Day weekend. But there's lots of those. So an extended answer is recorded. Devotees have written books on the topic, but I'll just because of time, and there's other, so I'll point to those other resources, the books on the topic and the recordings on the topic. Right here in Gita Nagari, where many of those discussions have taken place, I'll just say something that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. The bottom line, after, you know, there's this method, that technique, this approach, this thing, that thing, and while they're all useful, they're useless, minus one ingredient. So the one ingredient is the most important, and that is the effort to do so. The effort to control the mind and bring the mind to Krishna is the essence, without which this technique, that method, this recommendation, this possibility aren't going to be very effective. They may be very interesting, but they won't be effective for you unless there's a strong effort. And you take that strong effort to take the mind that's wishing to go here and there and bring the mind to Krishna. Krishna instructs to do so, and within the instruction of Krishna to do so is the power to do so. What's lacking is not the power to do so. What's lacking is our effort to sincerely, faithfully take up the instruction, knowing within the instruction is the power to do so. So the most important component in fixing the mind when chanting the Maha Mantra is the effort to keep the mind fixed on the Maha Mantra. Then you can add the different, you can try this and try that approach. Faith in Krishna. Assuming willingness to uphold requirements, how can one come to believe beyond any doubt in Krishna and the philosophy? For me, belief is the biggest challenge because, especially given the many philosophies / beliefs in the world. Well, that's a nice question. I mean, they're all nice questions, but this is especially a nice question. It's very universal and fundamental. faith in Krishna. So whoever wrote this, like many of us who are assembled here, before we had the kind of faith in Krishna that we have today, we had faith in something universal. We had faith in something. And that faith in something is discussed in Bhagavad Gita, faith that's moved by the modes of nature. We have faith in something because faith is intrinsic to the soul. So how does faith intrinsic within the soul toward Krishna become strengthened? While there's competing ideologies out there in the spiritual marketplace. And we, you know, we may have had contact with one or another, and we may have explored one or another, and now here comes this faith in Krishna idea, and how do I move with the faith in Krishna? Just a few things to keep it simple. One is, side by side with whatever else is going on, in which, you know, someone may have some curiosity or faith in, take up, without like deleting any of those things necessarily, take up sincerely devotion to Krishna. Some activities that make sense to you, that resonate with you, that are part of devotion to Krishna while maintaining these other things, and see what happens. Make a comparative study in the laboratory of your life and see what happens. That was something that somebody recommended to me at one point, and so I did that, and I had, you know, a comparative realization about the effectiveness of chanting Hare Krishna compared to chanting other things and other disciplines. Chanting of Hare Krishna, I found from direct experience, had the greatest spiritualizing effect. And it sustained. Whereas the other things, disciplines, didn't have that same effect, nor were they sustaining. Although some of them were powerful, and, you know, they were useful to a certain degree in a certain way, but they didn't have the same effect of the chanting of Hare Krishna. So like that. Something that resonates, do that one and go with it and see where it takes you. And then as far as the teachings, same. One can read multiple teachings and side by side read Bhaktivedanta purports and see where it takes you. A comparative study of, you know, different philosophies, if that's the approach that one wants to take. Like, you know, so it's not necessarily you just have to drop everything and close your eyes and jump in the pool. And that's how you take part in devotional service. You can do it in a comparative way. And then another very important item, and this is now three, so the process of chanting, the teachings, and the third is teachers. My experience was, my experience was in Srila Prabhupada, I found the example of a perfect person. So it was easy. I mean, I didn't have lots and lots and lots of personal association. Very little. But it was very clear in, you know, what I knew of Prabhupada's life and what I read from his teachings. Here's a perfect person. And I hadn't found another such person, and I have not found such a person. So it's easy. If you can find a perfect person, take shelter there. And if you find a perfect person in Srila Prabhupada, take shelter there. And in those who are strictly following, sincerely following. Take shelter there. There may be other options out there in the universe. That's all right. I need one that connects me with that which I have faith in, and full confidence it will take me to Krishna. That's sufficient. I remember, this is now subjective or autobiographical, but I remember at a certain point deciding, well, you know, I'm practicing Krishna consciousness, but Bhaktisiddhanta used this expression, you can lick the outside of the jar of a honey, or you can open the top and stick your finger in and taste the honey. And that way you can know what the taste of honey is. So I thought, like that, I'm practicing, but Prabhupada created ashrams where persons could full-time just immerse themselves in devotional service. So I'd like to do that. I'd like to experience that for some period of time and see, you know, what happens, see what it's like. And when I did that, and we would go on Sankirtan, I would explicitly tell people, you know, I'm doing this because it's the best thing I've come across. If you know something that's better than this, let me know. And if you don't have something that's better than this, you should take it up. You don't have to live in the temple, but you should take it up. If you have something better, let me know. If you don't, check it out and apply it in your life. I don't know. How long am I going to be doing this? I don't know. I'm doing it now because it's the best thing I know. And if I find something that's better, I'll be doing that. Like that. It's not follow the yellow brick road. If there's something that resonates, you do that. And it'll take you to the next and take you to the next and take you to the next. That's how faith grows. Something that makes sense, you do that. And if it's genuine, something's going to happen. And you'll get a wow experience. Wow. That was really amazing. So let me go back to the same source. Let me hear something further and see what else resonates. Like that. And then faith grows. By acting in knowledge, one gets realization. And when you get realization, your faith increases. And that from which you heard and received knowledge, go back and gain some further knowledge and then apply it, act in knowledge, and you get some realization that will increase your faith and so forth. And, you know, I repeat. That's how faith grows. Not blind faith, but, you know, faith through experience, direct experience, through association of those who are qualified to guide. So this will be the last question. Yesterday you mentioned the harm of seeking fruitive results in spiritual activity, for example, japa. What are the best ways to prevent and overcome this? Best ways. Well, the best way to overcome anything that's in this dark material world is the chanting of the holy name. That's the best. And then there are things that can help do that nicely. So, you know, in other words, there's the point of the pin, there's the shaft of the pin, and there's the head of the pin. So you know, if you have the head, the point of the pin is the holy name. And then there are things that we can do that can assist the chanting of the holy name to do it nicely. But it's Kali Yuga, it's a little difficult to chant the holy name attentively because the mind is all over the place. But if the more that you can do that, chant the holy name attentively, then you know, the tendency for fruitive results, you can overcome it. Now, fruitive results is another different answer. Is fruitive results is the product of contact with passion. By the soul coming in contact with the mode of passion, one desires fruitive activity. Activity, and specifically fruitive activity. Get the carrot. Run after the carrot. Go do something to get something. Mode of passion. So, relief from the mode of passion, or another channel besides the passion channel, is the mode of goodness channel. So that's another assist in relieving oneself from the mode of passion. And that is, when you do something not to get something, but you do something according to the teachings of Lord Kapila, when one does something simply because it ought to be done, that's a mode of goodness motivation. Or, I do this because I know it will purify my existence. And that's not a fruitive thing. I don't become more famous or more wealthy or more, you know, I have more stuff, I have more toys so I can, you know, enjoy more. It's just my existence becomes purified. So that's something that also can help. Fruitive activity is just not, you know, a peak experience while chanting, or while doing devotional service, I'll get recognition from others. That's a mode of passion, motivation. Just because it will purify my existence. And I want to become pure. And to become pure, that will make me nearer to Krishna and dearer to Krishna. So it's just to please Krishna and to have a relationship with Krishna, I'll do my activity of devotional service without a fruitive intention. Just it'll purify me. So just take that specifically in terms of chanting, that the peak experience idea in chanting. Some of us, maybe many of us, maybe even most of us, maybe even all of us, have had some experience with chanting that have been like awesome, like really, 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 really special. And so we may look back upon those really, 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 really special experiences and like be in anticipation of that really, 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 really special peak experience. That mentality is a mode of passion mentality, bringing that into the activity of devotional service, or specifically in this case, chanting. So to replace that motivation with, let me chant simply because it will purify my existence. And you practice that nicely with chanting, and then it will also relieve you of the fruitive tendency with all the other forms of devotional service. We still want, in addition to purification, we want that our founder Acharya will be pleased. So we would like, you know, our in our strategic planning, the motto or slogan is, more devotees, happier devotees. You know, quantitative, qualitative. And we want to measure qualitative. We want to measure quantitative. But so we may have a goal in our devotional service, but really it's purification. So we have a goal that we're striving for. It may not, like Prabhupada came to America. He, you know, it was a mission of giving Lord Chaitanya's message. So naturally he would want people to take Lord Chaitanya's message. And for a whole year, they weren't taking Lord Chaitanya's message. So, one sense, one could think his mission wasn't fulfilled. But in another sense, he was carrying out the instruction of his spiritual master, so he was fully satisfied, knowing that his spiritual master would be very pleased that he was striving to carry out the instruction of his spiritual master. And it was certainly nice when people started taking part. But he wouldn't have been a failure if they hadn't. He would have been success because he was carrying out the instruction of a spiritual master. So there's these two different, you know, we want some result that looks like the mode of passion. It can certainly be the mode of passion. Commonly it's the mode of passion. But it can be a transcendental aspiration to keep you fixed on doing things nicely for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. At the same time, as I've been saying here, the results department, that's Krishna, and service department is ours. So serve nicely. And that's one can be satisfied and happy and contented. And then the fruitive tendency within devotional service is taken away. It's Krishna's happiness. It's our purification and Krishna's happiness. So it's 20-something after 1, and we're supposed to end at 1. And I've got to leave. It's probably many of you also have to leave. You want some prasadam? Did you make it? Okay, I'll definitely pass it out. Okay. This is Radha Damodara Mahaprasadam.
Yes, Guru.
Okay. Ki jai. See the Prabhupada, ki jai.
Jai.